everyone. This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program in the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, July 30th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch for further instructions. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. It's been a couple of weeks, guys. Is everybody ready for this show?
I am very present.
Absolutely.
All right. To begin with our opening riff from Quo, it comes from October 6, 1996. All the created universe exists because of opposites. It exists because there is light and dark. The dark side within each of you is as it must be in order that you may manifest at this time, at this place. You cannot get over your humanity. You cannot become an entity without polarity. You must be that which your nature is. You are top to bottom and side to side, entities of 360 degrees, the full circle of personality, from lightest and brightest to the deepest and darkest. The skill lies in seeing your emotions as information-bearing energies, offering to you the fruits of your own past and the seeds of your transformation into an ever-emptier, ever-lighter, ever-hollower self. The earthly part of the self, that soil in which the dark nature hides, is a heavy thing, and it is that soil in which truth and beauty and those mysteries which you call forward grow out of this very soil.
Wait a minute, everybody says, I've read the raw material. I'm absolutely certain that Ra said all is one. Of course, Ra was sixth density. We're not. Ra had the advantage of a good deal more experience, three more densities of it. We are little third graders, and we are human. And for us, things are light and dark. Things are positive and negative. Things are as they are. Welcome to the world. If we didn't need this, we wouldn't have come. If we didn't want to serve here, we wouldn't have come. We're here, make no mistake, for a reason. For several, actually. We're here to learn, and we're here to serve. And all of that, the learning and the service, can and will take place in the midst of various confusion. And that's okay. We only need to do our best. I think it's important to trust this situation, in spite of the fact that often it seems somehow all wrong. I know it certainly did for me yesterday. I had an endoscopy and colonoscopy yesterday. And that is one of the most uncomfortable hospital procedures you can possibly imagine, where they hook you up from stem to stern and take a good look to see that you're okay. Guess what, guys? I'm okay. And that, you know, it seems like an awful lot of trouble to go to just to find that out, but doctors are a paranoid lot. Just sure something's wrong somewhere. Nope. I'm perfectly normal. Praise the Lord. But boy, did things seem light and dark yesterday. As I was praying and singing in the hospital operating room, waiting for a doctor who was, called away, maybe a lunch break, I don't know what he was doing. It was all too long. And prayer certainly helps at times like that. Of course, the folks in there probably thought I was a little batty singing away, but it comforted me. And I think that's what it's all about. We do what feels right to us. We look at the catalyst that comes our way, all the things that happen to us, good and bad, so-called. And we just try to learn from that, all of that, the positive and the negative. Without judging, but with an eye to keeping on looking, never letting the gaze waver, there will be gifts come to us from all of those things that happen. Likewise, it's up to us to sense when we can be of service and go to it. Give it our very best shot. Whether it's raising a child or cleaning a house or journaling or taking a walk. And just opening one's heart. All of those are ways of serving. I know it is my lot also to wish sometimes for that sixth entity rest, union, all one thing, and that one thing, love. What a divine rest that will be. And we can approximate it for moments at a time here below in this realm. One thing to remember, guys, we're all in this together and we have each other for company. If you doubt it, just stop a minute. Enter the silence and see if that silence isn't full of your friends. We shall do this thing. We shall lighten the consciousness of planet Earth. We have been doing it. We are doing it. We will do it. Conjugate it as you will. It's happening. I've watched it since the 70s. Things are better now than they were then in terms of people waking up, in terms of people joining a band of blessed people who want to do that, lighten the consciousness, live with open heart. Don't feel bad if you doubt sometimes. Spend as little time there as possible. come back quickly to the open heart. I pray you all may join me there. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Carla. We have a caller, a couple callers, actually, beginning first with area code 281. 281, your microphone is unmuted. With whom are we speaking?
Hi, guys. This is Michael. How are you doing today?
Hi, Michael. We're well. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Got a couple of questions, if I can ask them.
Absolutely. Go for it.
All right. Well, first I want to say thanks to Carla and everybody else who's associated with getting the information out there. I was searching for some information, and this was the closest to being what felt accurate to me. So I just want to say thanks for all the trouble you guys go through to get it out there. All right. So,
my pleasure.
Oh, yeah. I had sent a request for additional information, which you guys sent back to me, and I appreciate that. And I'm talking about the little one-sheeter. Are you familiar? You guys are familiar because you sent it out, but are you on the same page with me about the little one-sheeter that you send out regarding healing stuff?
Yes, that's correct. I'm familiar.
Okay, great. On the back of that one-sheeter, it talks about, I'll just read it to you. Now look for the explanations left among your people's records at various times describing the lines of force through which the intelligent infinity forms a body energy fields. I hate to assume, but I'm speculating that they're talking about the meridians, the acupuncture points, or am I off base here, and they're talking about a different line of energy fields, energy lines, which could also be the phi ratio, because we're built on the phi ratio. The human body is built on the phi ratio.
Personally, that sounds like a safe assumption myself, but I have no further or deeper knowledge on that topic.
Anybody else there have a...
I don't know. I have never been allowed to read that material, so... Or, you know, not to work with that material, so I honestly have not
okay.
investigated it at all. Austin, Jim, you have any idea?
Go ahead, Austin. You got anything?
No. I'm with Gary. That sounds...
You're muted.
Sorry. That sounds like a pretty good guess, what Gary said. Or what you said, Michael. I agree with Gary that that's as good as I can probably guess.
What about the lines in a crystal? I don't know. I'm just saying that's one other source of information that is associated with healing.
Mm-hmm. I agree
yeah,
with you on that.
We don't have a whole lot of experience. I think Jim probably has the most experience with what you're talking about. Would you mind reading that again?
Sure. It says, now look for the explanations left among your people's records at various times describing the lines of force through which the intelligent infinity forms the body energy fields. And it makes sense if you've ever, I studied acupuncture, and acupuncture points to meridians, and it made sense to me because one of the things that the Orion group does is they attach this machine to you based on your energy systems, the chakra points and your meridians. And I've been able to at least alleviate some of the negative energy that they send out through these machines by using my knowledge of the chakra points, not chakra points, the acupuncture points on the body.
That does sound like the best explanation.
That's fascinating.
We never went any further in our questioning with that. It was just one of the many areas that was kind of left hanging. But what you say makes sense. It, you know, has that ring of truth to it.
We're sorry that we're not clever, but we don't know.
It just made sense. But I know we're also built on the phi ratio, which is also an energy force, an energy line, because, you know, everything is energy. So even a mathematical line is energy. And actually this system, this solar system, is based on the phi ratio. So I just figured I'd ask you guys. Now, I have another one from the same paper. Can I ask you that one, too?
Sure. Maybe we can
okay.
do better with it.
All right. On the very front of it, it says that at the end of the day, you know, this is for your balancing part, for your own personal balancing, that after your day's catalyst, that you sit down in meditation, you get that catalyst feeling back in your body as much as possible, and then you don't force it to go away or to switch. you just allow it to switch naturally to the opposite catalyst. And I'm going, this doesn't make sense to me, because let's say that you had an awesome day. You're loving everything, you're being positive, you're serving others, and then at the end of the day, now you have to go into meditation, balance out this catalyst with all the negative opposites of it. That seems to be, well, I have numerous theories of why they would want you to do it. I'm curious to know what you guys have at least speculated from it.
Well, Ross suggested that the most balanced response to any catalyst that comes our way is unconditional love. So there are so many things, though, that draw us away from that unconditional love. And they usually have to do with our pre-incarnationally programmed lessons that come to us in the form of catalyst that helps us to focus in the areas we want to focus. So when we're either too high about something or too low about it, it's a good idea to balance it so that we're not high or low. We feel unconditional love and acceptance for ourselves, for the catalyst that came our way, for anybody that was involved in that catalyst. So we're able to see everybody as the creator. So the idea is, if you feel like that your focus has been pulled away from unconditional love in any direction that was significant, that would be helpful to balance in your evening meditation.
I agree with that. But let's say that you express love. Now what do you do? Are you supposed to go back and opposite catalyst, go to nothing?
Hang on. I think that it's very likely that most of what people experience, people big as they are, would be being pulled out of the open heart by jealousy, by grief, by anger, by some kind of negative emotion. And I think the principle the Ra group is going for here is to look at a negative emotion that is pivoted on fear, like, say, anger. Okay, the opposite of anger, and, you know, generally speaking, you're fearful about something because you're afraid that it will damage you, you know, like somebody pulling out in front of you in traffic. This is a really easy example. So, okay, you get road rage, you're very angry. And it's not a balanced reaction, but it's certainly understandable. But the opposite of that would be to look at the opposite side of that coin. What is the same catalyst looked at with eyes of love? So you look at the two sides of that, and after you've allowed the one and then the other to just become huge, you know, to completely take over your field of vision, you dolly back, say, to Cleveland, and so that you can hold those two in mind together, right? Two sides of one coin. So that all the pressure is taken out, and you simply have the open chakra, the open heart, and unconditional love. You're not over the top. You're not fearful or angry. You see the commonality of the two sides, so that you don't make the mistake, and I think it's beginner's mistake, of thinking that everything in life has to be good, you know. I will only think good things, and then only good things will happen to me, you know, that. Instead of that, you know, your aim is to take all the pressure off, rest in the open heart. And, Jim, how am I doing with this? Because you are the person who has taught the workshop on this.
Well, that's the basic idea, but I was just thinking while you were talking that if you do what he is suggesting, that you go out and you actually feel that unconditional love and compassion
mm-hmm.
for somebody, then that would be balanced action.
Yeah, maybe there's nowhere to go.
But I always look at whatever expression of love that I feel I have made to see if it was as pure as I can be done, is as pure as I would consider unconditional love to be. And there have been so few times where I've ever gotten that close, so it always seems like there's something in the action that can be beneficially balanced. But not as much as if, you know, you're obviously way out of line from unconditional love, then it's easier to see what the balance. I think it's a point that you have to call for yourself. You've got to make that choice as you go along the line, realizing that most of what you experience is probably going to be catalysts that could...
The main point here is really what a balanced state of mind is. And like Russ says, it's not indifference or objectivity, but it's, as you guys were saying, the observer not blinded by any feelings of separation, but rather fully imbued with love, as Ra talks about in session 42. And so if you're going through your day and you are naturally in a place where love flows through you, then that's not something that you'll need to balance at the end of the day. And most things that pull us away from this sort of naturally flowing love seem to be negative, but I think there are some positive type of emotions. There are certain types of hope that sort of indicate an attachment, sort of an imbalance towards a hopeful feeling. And that could be the opposite of a fear, and it's not necessarily balanced. It might, being hopeful about something might still blind you from a true perspective of love. So there are some positive examples, but the place where...
Far and few between.
the place where love is flowing, if you're naturally able to let love flow through you, then that's not really something that's going to need to be balanced.
Yeah, I think you're right, Austin.
And I second everything you guys have said. I don't really have anything good to add.
So do you have a follow-up question?
So I'll just comment based on what was said. I don't disagree with when you have a negative catalyst that you go for the positive. I was just trying to see if you had any thoughts about if you had a positive catalyst. It seemed backwards to... go and have, and while you're meditating, bring up
yeah,
the negative emotion.
Full of the negative. Yeah, no, I think sometimes there is in positivity an impulsivity that will not stand the test of time and is not actually an open heart, but is actually a kind of fear, if you see where I'm going.
Yeah, positive emotions can be sort of a projection to cover up negative emotions, and so that balancing would be allowing the negative emotions that are being repressed to come forward that the positive emotions are trying to hide from you.
So you just calm that impulsivity out and find the reality, the true open-heartedness. And
well, again, I don't disagree with you. There are catalysts, though, that I've experienced this because I do something I call the love experiment, and it's a way to get yourself no longer to judge anybody on physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. It's as soon as you see them, without even doing anything first, you say, I love you. And then you project love to that being. And that's not to hide anything dark or negative. Actually, it's just to you're expressing love.
It works just great. It's a real, a very real technique. And it helps. It greatly helps, especially if you might be having difficulty with that person otherwise. To just get it right out ahead of time. Okay, this is the Creator. Of course I love you. You know, I love you. You know, you're not reaching for it. It's just there. And I don't think that that's wrong. I don't think that that needs to be balanced, Michael.
I didn't either, but I figured I'd at least ask, you know, because maybe you guys have insights on this. I mean, you know, it's your life, you know. So I didn't think it made sense to do a backwards step. You know, if you're attaining love or trying to love or actually expressing love, and that's your catalyst, you don't go backwards and try and bring up fear and hatred during your meditation. That just didn't make sense to me. And I do have one more, and it happens to be on the topic you talked about today, which means I was supposed to call in today. And that's, you know, I'm looking right at it. It's book one, session four, where they say, you know, there's no right or wrong, no disharmony, nothing but identity, no polarity, no right or wrong, okay? Now, the Ra Collective, being six-dimensional beings, are actually not following what they're saying because they found you guys to do the channeling to right or wrong.
That is correct.
I think they see it as imbalancing and lack of balance that they were responsible for with the Egyptians.
Yeah, they don't place value judgments over that using terms of right and wrong. They even say, they're speaking to Don at some point, and they say, by your terms, we were not successful, or maybe failure. I'm not sure exactly what the term was. But they differentiate between how you guys see things in the third density realm and how, from our perspective, it appears. Yes, there are distortions that they want to redress, but whatever the outcome and whatever their actions in the past, all is well, all is perfect, all is complete, all is whole. There is no right and wrong.
Nevertheless, there could be perceived to be a paradox. And as far as I'm concerned, when you've hit paradox, you've hit spiritual material. So I feel very comfortable letting the paradox lie.
Okay. Then can I add to it?
Mm-hmm.
If there's no right or wrong, no good or bad, they talk about forgiveness, but there's no good or bad. So there's no reason to do forgiveness. And, you know, if you do a little search, you know, through all your material for forgiveness, there are numerous times where either the question is brought up about forgiveness or the Ra Collective talks about forgiveness, you know, like alleviating karma. Well, again, who cares? There's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad.
Well, that's in
forgiveness
sixth density.
Isn't
we're in third, so there's a tremendous mismatch.
We have to create an illusion as portions of the Creator in order for any action to take place, because as Ra said, back when there was no division between the conscious and subconscious mind, all third density entities saw that we were the Creator. There was no reason to do anything because all was one, no right or wrong, just as you're saying. So progress is very slow. There was it took a great deal of what we call time to make it through third density and to go through the densities and to give the Creator the gift of your experience as you go through and learn all these things. This is all a Maya game, a way of the Creator knowing itself. So we have to make this division in third density with the veil between the conscious and subconscious mind so we can have these experiences. It's like we're taking on the difficulties that in the ultimate sense really don't exist, but here right now they do, and by taking them on and balancing them out, we give the Creator an experience it wouldn't have without us doing this. By everybody doing this, then the Creator has a wonderful wealth of experiences, which seems to be the reason the whole creation was made, so the Creator could know itself.
I think another point about forgiveness to add to that is that if you feel slighted, then obviously you are automatically having that judgment of right or wrong, that you feel what somebody did to you was wrong, and the forgiveness aspect could just simply be the realization or the release of the judgment that that action was right or wrong. And so forgiveness could be moving from judgment to non-judgment. Instead of something being right or wrong, it's moving from thinking something is right or wrong to realizing that it isn't right or wrong.
To rephrase the point that Austin just made in my own slightly different terms, but while still being in congruence, forgiveness is the means to seeing the perspective that Ra is describing, the means to releasing the illusion that there was something wrong or right and establishing the vision that all is well, all is complete, all is one, all is perfect. It was an idea to begin with that there wasn't, that there is something other than perfection, that there is right or wrong, and then forgiveness is the return journey away from illusion back to the truth that Ra delivers or is here to share.
I think that this was a conversation, after all. This was not a lecture that the Ra group was giving. It was a conversation that he was having with Don. He was answering Don's questions. So Don was asking about third density concepts, how it all works. In third density, there's a certain stuff that works in third density, you know, and the universe of third density is posited on these lines. And so Don was trying to figure out, well, how does this work? And you know, in this particular case, it was, well, you substitute forgiveness for judgment, and that stops the wheels of karma, is one example of when the Ra group was talking about forgiveness. So I think that as Ra discusses ultimate reality as they know it, they are talking about union. They're from the density of unity. So, of course, they would see it that way. when they're discussing Don's very 3D questions, they are responding in terms of the 3D illusion and how that works and how you can work, as Jim said, work the game. And it's a very serious game. I don't mean to be frivolous, but it's a bone-deep game. And you know, the idea is to get from third to sixth, but still there's some hopping around to do in terms of coming to understand the right, wrong, light, dark, anode, cathode, and how that becomes the union. Or to be less linear about it, to look at the prayer of St. Francis in that same regard, which is a much less linear and very satisfactory way of looking at the same thing. To use third density to dissolve third density. Does that make sense, Michael?
I understand your philosophy. I disagree with it.
Uh-huh.
I just do, because if you separate the third density, you just created manyness. And I'm not saying about the right or wrong stuff. I'm just saying that the general actions, if you just read the material and look at the general actions, even for the raw collective to go and say, we're actually correcting a wrong, well, then I don't care what density you're at, you're no longer following what you're preaching. It could be third, it could be fourth, fifth, or sixth density. You know, I include myself in the allness. I consider myself to be the allness, just a part of the allness, a little speck in the spectrum, I like to say. And, you know,
I
don't separate, you know. A speck in the spectrum, you like that?
I like that.
You know, a little piece of light, a little photon, you know. So I just see it differently. I'm not trying to make it black and white. I'm just trying to make sense of the, you know, do as I say but don't do as I do statements.
Well, there is an infinite space to consider, to analyze Ra's words, and there are as many different opinions about this material as there are seekers to read the material. The four of us have sometimes four congruent opinions on what this material says, what it means, what its implications are, how to practice it, and sometimes our opinions agree and sometimes we don't. And a great place to discuss this, too, if you're interested, is the Bring Forth Forums. There's a whole community of worldwide seekers who approach the material with the same sort of scrutiny. And it can be very helpful for everybody to share your own discernment regarding what this material says. So, Michael, we thank you so much for your questions. We have another caller and other questions lined up, and it's time to move on.
God bless you, sir.
Caller from 801, with whom are we speaking? You are unmuted.
Thanks, guys. This is JP from Utah.
Hey.
Hi, JP.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
I got a quick one here. Carla, with all of your years of contacting all these different entities, Latte and Quo and Gracie, have any of them ever spoken about the concept of grace? And is it real, or is it just an idea, or is it a concept, or is it a metaphor, or is it an energy? If it's real, how does it work? Is it given? Is it stolen? Is it accepted? Can you tell me everything anybody's ever told you about grace?
Well, to me, grace falls more into my Christian life than into what Ra would have talked about, because Ra would have had a neutral term for it, grace being a very positive term. And grace is that space that Spirit allows for miracles. In an otherwise humdrum world, there can always be grace. There can always be that extra something that was so wonderful to be there and made all the difference. I don't want to pin Grace down. I guess I'm not focused. Who has more of a linear idea about Grace? Because I am so overwhelmed with the Spirit when I think about Grace that I'm not sure I have words.
Wow.
I feel Grace all the time.
Take an off-the-cuff stab at it. I think grace is that infusion of the greater to the lesser, you might say. You sort of rise above the limitations of the human circumstance and get out of the corners that you're pushed into in your mind, and suddenly you become aware of the broader perspective. And in so doing, maybe that gives you a capacity to act in a way that you couldn't have previously, because you've been opened up to the larger picture. You've been brought into your heart. You can suddenly forgive where you couldn't forgive, or see what you couldn't see. And you have a courage in that grace and a capacity to accept that which had previously seemed unacceptable. And you can move through that which had before seemed to be a wall.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
We'll go with that. How's that?
I like your answers. I really do.
Well, I'm really glad.
Well, I guess maybe
we were having a real difficulty in responding in a way which enlarged the capacities of an already wide open mind to find something new, you know. And so it's good that we haven't completely lost our touch.
Does that answer it for you, JP?
I think so. Thanks a lot.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks as always for your great energies and your support.
Thanks.
Have a wonderful day, JP.
Thank you.
And that exhausts our two
well, that was fascinating.
Live questions.
Yeah, I'll have to go back over the Michael's material because it was very interesting.
Our first question submitted in advance comes from Marjorie via email. Marjorie asks, what happens to pets after they die? And she doesn't say it, but she's asking according to this material.
Yeah. Well, according to this material, if I'm remembering it correctly, the Ra said if the animal were not invested with love, it would simply go back into the gene pool of its kind. If it were invested with love, it might choose to come back again to its human for another experience of comradeship with the human. Or it might even have the capacity to graduate into third density and come back as a little boy or girl.
If they've reached the point, if the second density creature, otherwise known as an animal, has reached the point that it is being identified as a pet, it's probably fairly advanced second density consciousness. And like Carla was saying, if it's had the benefit of interacting with people, then there's a good chance that it has developed an individuated consciousness or somewhat. And correct me if I'm wrong, guys, it may have activated the spirit complex and maybe close to third density harvestable. So therefore, when it dies, it may walk those steps of light and graduate and move on to third density. But otherwise, as far as I'm aware, it just continues, as would the third density entity, to incarnate in a new physical vehicle in order to continue the progression upwards in evolution.
Good to me, too.
If you go on lawofone.info and search for Gandalf and read the category for the LL cats, you can get some really great insight on the evolution of second density.
The cat-agory?
The cat category. It's really interesting. One of the things I really liked about, I think Ra mentions it, but there's also at one point an entity that Carla channeled named Lalina, who supposedly was dedicated to working with second density and helping second density harvest, I suppose, through imposing images through dreams and just sort of helping them differentiate in more subtle ways than we can as direct interaction as humans. I think it's just a really interesting topic for me. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, Lalima was a fascinating contact. Very loving, but did not like to speak. Had a great deal of difficulty speaking. And sang, actually, if it had to produce anything, you know, tones of some kind. It didn't like to talk. It would rather sing. Gave great healing tones. Well, I don't know how great the healing tones were. It felt to me like I was caterwauling, but caterwauling. Oh, dear. Now we're off again.
One of those things.
Anyway, there it is.
Yeah, the very first session I remember reading that Lalina came through, she said that she had never worked with a human channel before. She normally worked with second density, and she seemed really tickled by the idea of channeling words. And, or I shouldn't say she, they seemed really...
I think it was definitely a feminine energy.
Yeah, it felt feminine.
Feminine, and I would always lose my breath. Remember that, Mick?
I do.
Yeah, I just could barely get my breath when I was trying to channel her.
It sounds like she was sort of an amateur channeler to humans.
Yeah. But she was game.
All right. Before moving on to our next one, it occurred to me that in JP's question, he was attempting to pronounce one of the Confederation sources, and I thought I would help out with that. JP, you were referring to one of the sources that is spelled L-A-T-W-I-I. And that is generally pronounced Latwi on this end.
I was wondering if we were going into the coffee business with the latte.
Yeah, I heard latte.
Yeah, but it could also have been Latos, you know. Latos and Latwi sound a lot alike.
Yeah, that might have been what he was saying.
Well, they do have the crispness and the sharpness of a good cup of coffee, being fifth density in origin.
And the aroma.
Our next question comes from Toth Apprentice via Facebook. Toth Apprentice says, "Hello, can you recommend reading material outside of the Law of One books?" And adds, "Stay blessed."
What a sweet thing to say. Thank you very much. Stay blessed yourself, and so may it be. We don't usually recommend at least channel material other than working on the raw material for the simple reason that we are working on the raw material, and you start pulling other channeled entities in and you start going crazy as far as having a conversation. But isn't there a thread where everybody was giving their 10 favorite books or 5 favorite books?
There's multiple, I think, threads on Bring Forth where people list their favorites. There's also a sub-forum titled Non-LL Research Channeled Sources, where a lot of other non-LL channel sources are discussed.
Ah, but not by us.
No, none that we've said. This is Jim's favorites, Carla's favorites, Austin's,
right.
Mary's.
No. The answer to that would be a good solid no, if you're asking about other channel sources that we would recommend, that I would recommend. But as far as just simple books, you know, what are some of everybody's favorites? My absolute favorite for the beginning reader is Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of the Yogi.
Yeah.
It's a great one to start with.
I think for people new to channeling or spirituality, I tend to recommend Conversations with Gods and Seth books, especially Conversations with God. I don't agree entirely with everything in there, but I think it's a highly positively oriented source of information. It's a basic primer in my thinking. But otherwise, my triumvirate includes The Law of One and the work of Ramana Maharshi, specifically Talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi. It's for like 4 years or so, people who came to see him and sometimes received responses from him when he wasn't completely silent. For 4 years, those Q&As were recorded with him and put into the book Talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi. And anything by Eckhart Tolle. Those three sources, I think, focus on unity or oneness or non-duality, the basic heart of the Law of One, in a very helpful way. And in addition to those, there's lots of other sources, Joseph Campbell, Aldous Huxley, Houston Smith, to name a few.
One of my all-time favorites is a book called Road in the Sky by George Hunt Williamson. And he incorporates UFO contact along with the philosophy there. And W.E. Butler's The Magician, his training and work for the overall attitude of the adept.
I'm a terrible reader. I don't normally absorb what I read, but especially recently I have really gotten into the works of Carl Jung. And if you're also interested in his work, Man and His Symbols is really good. He contributed. He wrote one chapter. It's a total of 5 long chapters. And the others are written by some of his favorite students, written near the end of his life in an attempt to make his information more accessible to the masses. And he also has some shorter essays, one called The Undiscovered Self, which is really, really good. He's written about a wide range of things that I think raw readers might be interested in. He's written a book about UFOs. He wrote an essay about synchronicity. He was really interested in synchronicity and what it was and implications. Other than that, on like the human spiritual side, I've recently really gotten into Ken Wilber. Like I said, I'm a terrible reader, so I do a lot more listening than reading, but he's written many books. And I think he's got some really valuable insights for modern spirituality that apply to all aspects of life. And as fiction goes, I'm slowly making my way through a book that I think Carla has mentioned before, Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Stranger in a Strange Land. I really, really like that book. I haven't finished it yet, but more than halfway through, and it's probably definitely making it up to the top of my favorite stories.
You're only an egg, but you're grokking.
Yeah, the concept of grokking itself, I think...
is a wonderful concept.
Yeah, and that is where I'm sure many people have heard that term before, but that's where it came from, is actually Robert Heinlein's book.
And just to finish up, here's a real oddball one. I have always loved... William Butler Yeats, his poetry and his life and his thought, very mystical and beautiful.
And I can't believe I forgot to mention Ken Wilber, like
Austin
right, already
has.
Grace and Grit.
Oh my God, yeah, I love Ken Wilber. His whole system of philosophy is highly congruent with the Law of One. And more so, he's a walking encyclopedia of the world's wisdom traditions, religions, spirituality, psychology. And he's formed one of the most inclusive and comprehensive systems of thought, as Austin and I discuss, of which we're aware. And what I love most about it is that no matter what realm he is exploring or where he is in mind, his whole cosmic view, and it is a cosmic one, is underpinned by non-duality or unity. His whole system is oriented towards that end. So that's another reason that he appeals to both Austin and I.
So I guess you uncorked something there. Sauce Apprentice.
So it is 1:51. Our next question had multiple aspects and was meaty. Let's jump to the end. We had one that was submitted, incidentally, by JP via email.
Hey, JP.
Hey again, JP. It was a shorter one. He said, much is said, taught, and spoken about third, fourth, fifth, and sixth densities, but not so much is said about seventh and eighth. Did Ra infer or hint about it, or is it just too far off in our future to worry about now?
I think it's probably incomprehensible, basically.
Yeah.
Ra talked about it, calling seventh density the density of foreverness and eighth density the timeless period, which combines the octaves. In other words, the eighth density of our creation is also the beginning of the first density of the next creation. And when it goes into timelessness, it shares the eighth and the first. So because of the fact that they are both looking, well, one, the seventh density is entirely, seventh density is entirely done with looking back and looks only towards the Creator, is not interested in exploring the personality, but simply wants to lose itself in the Creator. So it's looking forward to that black hole, as we perceive it, of union with the Creator. And so that's the seventh density, and we have so little in common with that density, I suppose that's why it didn't really come up. And I mean, correct me, guys, if I'm wrong, or add to it, correct, amend, fix.
No, I think Ra was a little reluctant to discuss densities higher than their own because it was a mystery to them as well. They did say that they had their own teachers that I can't remember if they said they were seventh density, but I would assume that their own teachers would have to be seventh density, which we can't even conceive of what it's like to have a teacher who resides in timelessness and foreverness. How does somebody that's in timelessness even interact with something that's not in timelessness? It just boggles a third density mind. So I think not only was Ra reluctant to share because they hadn't experienced it themselves and they didn't fully know, but also just because, you know, we have issues grasping sixth density concepts as a third density mind, and fifth density concepts and fourth density concepts. So they gave us more than enough to chew on without sharing something that's even above them.
Mm.
Yeah, I Jim's word, I think, applies perfectly. Incomprehensible is, I think, part of the reason why Ra has difficulty speaking of the higher densities to us, because it's just our mind that is hardwired for a veiled space and time situation here in third density just can't, even in our wildest imagination, conceive, form a concept about what the higher densities are like. Ra says in 16.5 that we ask you to consider as we speak that there are no words for positively describing fourth density. We can only explain what is not and approximate what is. Beyond fourth density, our ability grows more limited still until we become without words. And I think in seventh density, they're, for all intents and purposes, without words.
In some aspects, am I incorrect? Or I have a feeling that sometimes there was a mystery that they did not want to plumb.
Yeah, and actually what I was referring to as their teachers was in session 28, question 16. They say, it has been impressed upon us by our own teachers that there is a mystery-clad unity of creation in which all consciousness periodically coalesces and again begins. And then they did talk about a mystery that they wouldn't plumb as well. So there is mysteries beyond Ra. Like, they weren't all-knowing beings, and in some ways they are fallible, and they don't know everything. They're evolving as well. They are brothers on a path. They're a little bit further on the path than we are.
Yeah, this is a really good point that Austin just made to keep in mind for anybody reading this material. It's not scripture, it's not infallible. And further, we regardless of the veracity of what Ra has to say or not, then there's a process of our own interpretation of the material and determining how it's going to apply in our lives. So it is, we have 4 minutes remaining. I think that will conclude the...
Oh my gosh, that was the fastest hour ever.
It did fly by.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap up. I will invite everybody listening now, or if you've downloaded the show, to check out our homecoming event. You can find more information on the homepage of bringforth.org. In short, it's LL Research's biggest, quote-unquote, event.
Relative big.
And it's so much fun, and it's so wonderful, and it's just a blast, and come.
Yeah, we meet in a circle, and we share our spirituality, especially as it's focused through this material. Some people, though, are arrive just having become aware of the Law of One, and some people have been working with it since its beginning in the early 80s, so there's no evaluation, there's no
A lot of people
judgment.
Just come and hang, you know, that they don't have anything to present. They just come and listen and sweat, and it's always hot out there, almost always hot out there. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have a weekend like this? We're in, like, the 70s today, but it doesn't usually happen like that in Kentucky in August, not a lot.
We've had a lot of lucky weekends.
We have.
Last one was the hottest, if I recall.
It was the hottest, and it was the wettest. We got rain to the point where we had to get a new tent.
Yeah.
The canopy failed.
But
nobody was in it at the time, though. We were very lucky.
It was a blessing in disguise, though, because while they were installing a new tent, we got to go sit in a circle in part of Jim's rock garden that ended up being just an amazing setting for that morning's presentations.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely was. But we do keep people dry, and it's not so much about coming to the event and learning new information, though that happens, but it's about the people. It's about sharing in the open heart. So, Carla, would you like to say goodbye to our listeners?
I would. You know we love you all. And please let us know if you have a concern or a question. As you could hear today, we can't answer them all satisfactorily, but we sure will give it our best, and we're full of love for you. That's for sure.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions, including Marjorie, Toast Apprentice, Michael, and JP today. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's GMT-4, and we'll talk with you then.
I land on an island coast where only flows I see are ghosts. I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun and search all day.